Blog Talk Radio.
Right. Welcome to the No Romance Without Finance show. This is the hottest show on internet radio. Normally, I am on Blog Talk Radio, but this week we had some kind of a technical difficulty. It wouldn't let me create the show like I normally do. So in place of that, we always have a backup. We always have a plan B. We always have an option, which is exactly in line with what the theme for this particular show is about. So everything worked out well in the way it was actually supposed to. So let's go ahead and hit it. I'm your host. My name is Brother Vernon Muhammad. Peace and blessings. I'm glad that y'all can join me today this Sunday evening on the No Romance Without Finance show. And I am feeling elated because I have one of my new favorite artists. I can add a name to the list of the greats. Everybody who's heard this show has at one time or another heard me talk about Charles Fitz and Kevin A. Williams. Who else is out there? There's a bunch of people out there. Those are two of my top two of my favorite. But now I can add a third. I can add one more and make it a perfect trifecta. Today we have with us Brother Salam Muhammad, a brilliant artist out of New York City. He has been doing phenomenal work, and I really just started seeing some of his work. And, brother, I got to tell you, this is the type of stuff I want in my home. How are you doing today, brother?
I'm well, by the grace and mercy of Allah. And, I'm overwhelmed just by the comment that you just made. It's a blessing to know that, you know, you put me up there with those artists, Charles Biff and Kevin Williams and more. But that's a blessing right there. These are the artists that I grew up with, you know, I grew up looking at and was inspiration to me. So, I mean, just knowing that you appreciate and look at me as in that rank of great artists, that's such a blessing. And I thank God for that. I'm doing well. You know, just pushing forward with the art. And I thank God for this opportunity here. So it's a blessing.
All right. That's good stuff. Yeah, man, they say that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And yeah. I tell you, there's certain pictures, certain drawings or paintings that you look at, you can't help but to just stop and stare and say, wow, that is beautiful. You know, the artist really captured the reality and convey the reality in that work. And there's certain works and, you know, certain pictures I've seen. I've seen a lot of art. You know, I can't necessarily call myself a big art fan, but, you know, I see something that I know I like. It, you can't help but to remember it. You can't help but to take notice of it. So from the moment that I first saw your art, and particularly the art that showcases the culture of Islam, the culture of the Nation of Islam, and the beauty of Black Muslims in history in America, you know, that side is very rarely put forward. So I was very proud to see someone who was representing where I came from and putting it out there in such a beautiful light. So thank you for the work that you do, brother. That really goes beyond just you, me conversation and what anything I could say about you.
Definitely. Oh, man, that's something. Thank God for allowing me to produce artwork like this. And I'm just, you know, it's always a blessing just to hear that those comments from many people. I thank you.
That's great. So give us a little background on yourself, brother, because I know you didn't just, you know, hatch from an egg a couple months ago. You know, where did you come from, and how did you get your start in this field?
Okay. All right. Well, basically, I've been drawing since the age of 9 years old. I've been as far as established as a business in doing paintings going on about 5 years now. I initially started doing drawings, pencil drawings, working with charcoal and, you know, working with graphite. And that was the initial stage of me as an artist. And just from, I would look at artists like Frank Morrison and, like we just mentioned, Kevin Wagon, you know, Charles Dibbs, Edwin Lester. These artists inspired me to actually pick up the paintbrush. And when I actually did that about 5 years ago, I mean, I took it by storm. I didn't go to any school to learn how to paint. It was through trial and error. It was just one day I went to Walmart and I got a couple of paints, and I wanted to impress my mother, and I just started painting on these little canvas boards that I got from Walmart. And from there, there were imitations at first of Frank Morrison's work and other artists' work, but from there it allowed me to create my own style of work, you know, for me to understand what I, you know, is here to do as a artist. So basically, you know, I just recently, you know, established a business with this, a certified business going on about 3 months now. I've been in business personally doing artwork for people, commissioned work, and just murals, different things of that nature, going on about 3 years from now. I think the business just went overboard once I was featured in the Final Call newspaper. So, I mean, for me, art was just an everyday thing for me. You know, I would, when in my father's house, when I would get on punishment, you could take away the TV, you could take away everything else, but you could never take away that pen or that pencil and that piece of paper that I always had the opportunity of finding. So, you know, that was big for me right there. And from there, it was a lot of competition in the schools. You know, people would draw different anime cartoons from on TV, and I would say I got to bring my best foot forward, you know, here. So that was really the motivation, the competition that I was up against. And just coming back, you know, into the Nation, because I was born into the Nation of Islam, but just coming back into it 3 years ago, I was just blessed to understand fully my role as an artist within the Cultural Revolution, and understanding that, you know, image and what we see shapes the reality of who we are. You know, as you grow up, if you have any children or anything, you would notice how little children used to just rip out posters out of magazines and post it on a wall. Eventually, they start looking like that person that they're trying to imitate. They start dressing like that person and following after their ways and what they see on TV. You know, it's image that allows them to be a certain way. So, you know, I said, hey, I understood the power of image through the artwork. And, you know, I just wanted to just create positive image to people so that we can change shape in our minds, we can change what's in our heart, we can change the way we act, the way, you know, we dress through the image, the cultural revolution that's displayed within the artwork. So that's basically the motivation of the artist Salam Muhammad and me as an artist right there. That's just the brief background of what's going on as of now. And there's so many things that are going to take place, God willing, within the next, you know, year or two. So and so forth. So it's definitely an ongoing cycle here.
That's beautiful. I love to see that. I'm glad to see, first and foremost, that you took your craft seriously enough to formally go on ahead, certify, and incorporate so that this is not just a hobby, it's not just a hustle, it's not just something you do. You actually have a brand now, and you're actually in the business of promoting your brand and your product, your craft and your product in a way that makes it legitimate no matter where you go in the world. So I got to applaud you on that, brother. Not enough of us take what we do and what we have at our disposal serious enough, and we end up leaving ourselves open to being taken advantage of and to losing out on opportunity.
Mm. Praise be to Allah. That definitely, I think Allah such is inspiring me to go forth and do such.
So now in doing that and in taking that step, you know, actually taking the business route, was that just, you know, the idea that was in your mind, or did you have somebody kind of pushing you and guiding you and steering you down that road so that you can make sure you make the right steps?
Basically, the idea of business was always, you know, in my mind in a sense of when I first started to see income coming in through the artwork. Because like I said before, it just usually was like a hobby. I would draw stuff for people. I would just do it for the you know, just the pleasing of myself to, you know, look at it, and I do art, show people, and it's good. But when people started saying, hey, you know, I would like to buy your artwork. I would like to, you know, get a custom portrait of, can you do something of me? And that's when I said, okay, this has to be taken serious. I started to understand the value of art and how much money it can bring in. And from there, I had, there was a brother named Brother Marlon. And this brother had a great conversation through a struggle that I was going through about a year ago. And through this conversation, brother inspired me to get more business-minded. And he told me, he said, brother, the problem with us, we have great products as a believing community. We have great talents. We have great things that we do. But the real problem is that we're not business-minded. And he said, brother, if I was really, really business-minded, I could sell rocks to people and make a lot of money. And it was funny because, you know, he's laughing about it, but at the same time, it was so real in what he was saying, from the simple fact that the business-minded aspect is what attracts people. You know, that organization sense, that the fact that you're organized, you're disciplined, you have things, business set up to where people gravitate towards that. For example, it's almost like, it's like if you come out here in New York and maybe in your city or any other city that you're in, I know commonly in New York, you have stores all over. You have stores that sell the same thing that these major stores sell. But see, you'll go into a regular store, you know, over here on 34th Street on the block, and it's just maybe a wholesale store or someone, some Indian people selling stuff out of that store that may not be legit as you would like it. It's probably the same product, but you would buy it from a more corporate store because you're attracted to that field of organization that's in there, the professional sense of it. You know, you're attracted to that will make you buy it's from this store. You know you're going to get policies where you can return it back in 30 days. It's more business-minded that attracts people. So I said, okay, people contacting me, calling me, and they want certain things done, you know, and I'm like, a lot of people wasn't serious, and a lot of people was serious and tried to get over. But now I said, since this is happening, you know, I was motivated to say, I have to start a business with this, a legit business to where everybody knows about it, in a sense to where there can be no, you know, side fishy stuff with people when it comes down to actually supporting, purchasing, and contributing to the artist Salam Muhammad. So That was more the motivation right there. And starting the business, I already knew from there was going to be a great success, just from the simple fact that I'm actually doing what the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad wants us to, and that's create business,
one thing a brother taught me, he told me, he said, what attracted people to the mosque or what attracted people to the Nation of Islam, it wasn't so much the teachings. The teachings came at a later part to where, you know, they started to understand it better. But it was the businesses that attracted the people, and that was the bait of it all. So understanding that, I said, well, this thing, now that we're in an even greater time where we want our people to come into the righteousness and the true reality of themselves, then the business level of us has to be sky high. You know, we have to do better, greater than what was done before. So that's where I'm at right now. I'm only 22 years old, and I'm like, I got to really make this thing happen. I have to go forth. I have to become, my set goal right now is like, you know, $1 million or more. That's the goal right there. But that's not even where, you know, I already know Allah will bless me with more through my consistency. But like I said, that was the main motivation of being business-minded, you know, just understanding that would be the base of bringing our people into just righteousness at that.
Brother, you hit so many good points right there in what you said. And just to grab one out of the air, the one that sticks in my mind first and foremost, the fact that you're 22, brother, 22 years old. I can remember what I was doing when I was 22 years old. Now, I was in the Nation. I came in the Nation when I was 19. But, you know, there wasn't the level of sophistication in the average 22-year-old brother back in my day. You know, I'm an old head. Back in my day, there wasn't that level of sophistication across the board. So you really, to hear you talk now, you know, makes the future look that much brighter. Because even nowadays, the average 22-year-old brother isn't, you know, thinking on that level of sophistication. So it's good to hear. It's good to see. It's refreshing to know that, you know, a young brother's got his head on straight. And that is the fertile ground. That's the key ingredient to making a long, fruitful road ahead of you. So I got to commend you and, you know, keep on doing what you're doing. The fact that you're 22, I always say to myself, now I'm at the point, I'm about to turn 42, so I always say if I can go back and talk to myself for 20 years, so if there's anything that I could pass on to you at this point is surround yourself and run in circles of people who are looking to increase their own net worth. I'm not talking about net worth in terms of finance, either. I'm talking about their own ability to be valuable, you know. You'll find a lot of people who want to latch on to you because you have talent and they want to ride your coattails, they want to run with you. But try to surround yourself with other individuals who are forward-thinking and progressive. Seek those people out in the world. They may not necessarily be in the small, you know, box where you come from, but seek those people out because one of the things that we're promised is friendship in all walks of life. And when we network, you know, when we network to the degree that we're capable of, then we start to add on, and you have groups and groups and groups of high-powered individuals who all have something of value to bring to the table, and that's how we advance and really make progress throughout our people in communities all over the country. So keep doing what you're doing, brother. That's definitely big. You mentioned one thing. You said one thing that I don't want to forget. You said cultural revolution. Background, please mute your phone. Thank you very much. You mentioned that you said the cultural revolution. Cultural revolution is a key and a critical part of the advancement of any people and certainly advancement of a nation. So how do you see this cultural revolution taking place, and what do you see the artist's role in that cultural revolution?
I see as artists in the cultural revolution, we have a major part, a seriously major part in this thing here. The reason why I say that is because, like I was just explaining before, it is what we see in imagery that changes and shapes the mind of people. You know, when you, like, for example, I'll give you a prime example. I follow over probably 1,700 people on Instagram. And through all of these pictures and all these people that post things on Instagram, I see artwork, I see fashion trends, and I see the almost repeatedly the same thing, you know, and on these pictures of women and men dressed the same way or, you know, with the makeup and the hair. So, and these things come from images of people, images of artwork that they have seen that they say, hey, that's cool right there. You know, I want to dress like that. And when they see it on someone else that's appealing to their eye, they say, okay, you know, we can do this too. And it goes on. It becomes a fashion trend now. Let's take it all the way back. When you think about going back to Egypt, the ancients, where the writings on the wall, the different, you know, artwork that's on the pyramids, different things like that, we know that people have even took that, they stolen it from us and created their trends with that, you know? And now something you'll see from an average person wearing right now, you wouldn't think that was all lined up from, you know, thousands of years ago, but it was, you know? But they took it and they created their own fashion trend with it. Now everybody has that on. Everybody's wearing that. Everybody's looking this way. Everybody's talking this way. It's what they see in imagery. So we as artists, we have something very valuable to bring to that cultural revolution here, you know, to where many people, children growing up, the new generation, can imitate what they see, positive images through imagery of paintings, through photos, through what we put out there that represents art.
So now, am I hearing you correctly? Your guess or your view of it is that imitates art as opposed to art imitating life, correct?
Yes.
All right. That goes a long way, and that's very significant because if you look at popular culture today, you know, everybody knows artists are just, if you want to call them artists, you know, celebrities who have recording contracts or whatever, they're just putting any and everything on out there. You know, I'm thinking of course, you know, you got the hip-hop artists and the R&B artists, you know, can't even call them crooners. Back in the day, you had people who was really singing from the soul. Now you got people, you know, just singing about any old thing. It's all pretty much the same thing. And then exactly. Even on the screen, you know, visual artists, the actresses and actors, the talk of the town nowadays is this show called Scandal. And I was just remembering the sister who plays in that lead role is the same sister who played in the movie Django's wife. And when I'm seeing her or remembering her was from that role, you know, so seeing somebody present such a strong and defined and courageous type of image to now, you know, somebody who just kind of goes against the where power should grow when it comes from our culture. You know, it just lets us know that the people that we're calling artists are just, you know, they don't hold themselves to a high enough standard, being that they are actually shaping the minds of the people. I mean, when an artist puts something out, after that artist puts that work out, you got people talking about just that work for days, months, years, you know, depending on how impactful that artist rendition is. You know, if it's a song, you know, everybody knows some of the Jay-Z hits that are out there. Or, you know, we can remember the first time, what was it, Lil Wayne was with Cash Money Millionaires. Everybody remembers, you know, their first one.
Exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm of that agreement that life actually imitates art. So the artist is really one of the most important figures in society and in a community. I've been on this tip lately, really talking about community living and intentional community. If you ever go back and listen to any of the previous No Romance Without Finance shows, one of the themes that I always try to include is the fact that, look, what's up ahead is going to be so intense that we, you know, people in our community in general, and us as and Muslims in the nation in particular, we're going to need another, you know. So it's very important that you, number one, find out the value that you can bring to the table yourself, but also find out who's around you. You know, what role does this brother serve? What role does this sister serve? And to me, when I can think of everything else, you know, from health and from defense and education and, you know, the people who wrote right up there in importance is arts and culture. We don't have a way to paint the vision for the future what we want our culture to become, then without vision, the people perish. So, yeah, the artist is in a prime spot. You all are the most valuable people that we can possibly imagine, especially when we're trying to get something of great value and importance up and off the ground.
Hmm. Absolutely. That's absolutely real. Wow.
I mentioned to you earlier, and I really do hope that you do look into this. I mentioned or asked you the question about the Cultural Revolution, the Chinese Cultural Revolution. I recommend that to anybody. Do some historical research and find out how significant the role of culture and the arts played in the reshaping of a nation, the transformation of a whole nation, one of the most populous nations on the planet today. It'll blow your mind.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, brother, tell us where we can find more of your artwork, because I'm actually sitting here looking at it now. And some of these pieces, bro, I'm telling you, I gotta go break the piggy bank and get my coins and nickels out, because I want a couple of these.
Definitely. The artwork, basically all of my artwork, you can right now I'm in a process of actually trying to get a official site made from the artist Amal Muhammad. But as of now, the alternative to that is going on my Facebook page. I have an art Facebook page where people can purchase the art as well from that page. And that page is www.facebook.com/theartofsalammuhammad. And when you go on that page, you'll see almost every piece that I have done within the last 2 years that is one of the mainstream pieces that's on the market right now, different images that I have done within the last couple of months that I have gotten prints for that are up there, and paintings that are on sale as well that are there that is available for purchase. So that's, you know, and there's many other sites where I have my painting. The famous piece that I have done is called Brown Sugar, and we actually got that piece published to where it's in many galleries right now, and it's on many sites where you can actually, many art sites where you can purchase that print. And there's going to be many more to come as far as the different art that is going to be published, and you can purchase it from different other sites as well. But as of now, the direct link to go and buy any art or view and consider purchasing is the Art of Salam Muhammad, the Facebook page, the Art of Salam Muhammad. So that's the basic link right there where you can see it all.
Gotcha. Okay, again, so for people who are on Facebook, if you look up The Art of Salam Muhammad, SalamMuhammad, this is phenomenal stuff. I'm looking at Brown Sugar right now, and I see why. I see why it's so popular, brother. I like this.
Thank you.
Do you have a favorite of all of the pieces that you've done, or at least the ones that are out here that people can, you know, kind of see and get a feel for?
That is that's a great question. A lot of them, I love all my art. I love it has significant meaning to me in different aspects personally in my life. I really, really love Brown Sugar though. That's my favorite one because of the simple fact that it displays love, and we know that the highest form of emotion in the world and the universe is love. But not just that. I was going over something with someone one time, and they said that one of the hardest problems in relationships is communication. And they said not in the sense of just communicating with one another, but how we communicate with one another. And I thought of that, and I said, I really took time to think about it. And I said, that's deep, because sometimes we get into conversation with one another, pointing out the wrongs or difficulties of either ourselves or one another, and it already places a defense mechanism in our hearts and in our minds to where we're not receiving what the other person is saying, if it's right or if it's wrong. And I said, sometimes we have to be creative and finding ways that break down that defense mechanism to where we're able to talk to one another and that person can understand it, accept it for what it is, and make that step towards change. And when I did Brown Sugar, you see the man and you see the woman, and they're laying upside down. And in that, that's a a pose right there or a moment where they're enjoying one another's company. Not just enjoying one another's company, but it's fun at the same time. You know, she's consoling him with her hand on his neck. And, you know, you obviously see that they're in a good time. They were talking. She's smiling, you know. That's a great time right there to bring up situations or problems that you may have to where now it's a fun moment. We can talk about it. We can address it. And it can be, you know, intention, possibility that it will change. So that's what really inspired me to do Brown Sugar, you know. And I see why a lot of people gravitate towards it because it's such a loving piece. They either say, hey, I'm in a relationship. It's not going that good. I want this within my relationship. Let me get this painting or get this print, put it up on my wall so we can always reflect that. Or it's either that couple or that one person that's saying, I've never been in a relationship like this. I want this. And they say, hey, let me get this print so I can post this on my wall to where every time I see that, it's confirmation that that is going to happen in my life one day. But that's why it's so powerful, and that's why it means a lot to me versus any other of my paintings that I've done.
I got you. You know, brother, it's hard for me to pick out a favorite, too, man. I'm looking at them as you're talking. And Brown Sugar is definitely up there. I love the one, A New Style. I'm looking at No More Worries, man, and that's another one that captures exactly the essence of what you're talking about, you know. I don't know the background story of that, but when I look at it, you know, I see consolation. You know, I see whatever is going on, I see that there's a strong, beautiful woman of God that is right there with that man, whether that's a young man, whether that's her son, whether it's her brother, whether it's her husband. You know, you can't tell from the picture, but you see the bond of family, and that's what it's going to take to make our community strong. And if there's any vision that could be painted, that can be left etched in stone or, you know, immortalized on canvas, I think that one right there speaks volumes.
Yeah, that one is that's a great one too. It's funny because on Instagram, little did I know, there have been famous people that have been posting that, and people contact me and let me know that, hey, someone has posted No More Worries on their Instagram page, and that's big for me right there. The significance behind No More Worries was I wanted to promote young marriage. And you see there, I was trying to grab or, you know, extract the essence of young individuals in that painting right there. There's too many girlfriend-boyfriend relationships going on that has those substance behind it. And we know that God promotes marriage. And that's where I wanted to make my standpoint within that painting right there, to where if we're trying to get in a relationship, we're young, we're settled, our minds are conditioned to be on that level, then let's take it serious as young individuals and go ahead and get married. So that was the foundation of it.
That was beautiful, man. This is absolutely beautiful. More people need to see this. Again, if you're on Facebook, definitely take a look and go to The Art of Salam Muhammad. That's the Facebook page. You can find out some good. You can find out more about his good works there. And I'm speechless, man. I'm going through it, and the emotion in the work, man, is nothing that, you know, would horrify you or make you sad or anything. Even in the ones that really, really do catch your emotion and touch your heart, you know, Words We Never Said. Where did that come from?
Oh, that's, Words We Never Said is a series that is going on right now. That's my latest series. Words We Never Said is initially dedicated to women that don't speak up to the problems and situations and stereotypical views that are in their personal life, you know, from even if they were a young child or all the way up to now and as a grown adult. The Words We Never Said is something that just extracting the pain that a woman has gone through, you know, everything that the world may look at her as. And then if you go and look at the painting, you'll see on the arms is those words, or on the hand is those words, the negative, but around her neck is the jewels of positivity confirmed throughout the Bible or confirmed through God's word. So I did the woman, and I did the little girl version, and now I'm on to the man. I did the couple version, and that's going to be considered the whole series of Words We Never Said. I'm trying to get more experience to to get it to be powerful as possible with each piece that I do in this series right here. But that one is definitely means a lot to me as of right now.
Got you. Yes, sir, brother. You definitely got something good here. So I want to thank you for giving me your time and accepting my invitation, brother. This was I've been looking forward to this for a while, so I'm glad that you answered my call. And since you are so wonderful at painting visions, let me paint a vision for you, brother. I envision you at an art show, an art showcase, somewhere down here in the D.C. area in the next 8 to 9 months, brother, right here in D.C., showcasing your good stuff. I'm envisioning an event, brother. So we're going to have to work together and put something together, brother, because I work with a team of people that promote events, and we'd love to put something together and make you one of the featured artists for the night.
Wow, that's a blessing. I received that. I'm looking forward towards that, beloved. That's something that is a boost to me. That's an honor right there, just to be able to know that I'm potentially making that happen right there.
Brother, that's what our culture is about. You grow strong, I grow strong, because your success is my success and vice versa, man. So let's see what we can put together and make happen.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, my brother, I'm getting ready to swing into the next segment of the show. It's an interesting topic that we have on tonight. You know, what's going on with the shutdown of the government and, you know, how that is actually affecting hundreds of thousands. Actually, it's probably affecting into the millions, because there are about 800,000 to 900,000 government employees that are just abruptly out of work now. But you got businesses and people who are dependent on the government for their means of subsistence. So that's what the next segment of the show is going to be about. Are you going to be able to stick around, or you have to run?
I'll stick around.
Okay, good stuff. There were a few people that I put out there. I put the link out there, and I, you know, started engaging people in conversation. And somebody's got some background noise, so if you're on the phone, on the computer, and you're not speaking.
Cruz is a very aggressive articulator of a hardline position that probably 20 or 25% of the country agrees with. He's in some ways much like Boro of Idaho was. He's a dramatic dissenter. Yeah. From the Washington establishment.
Audio playing. All right. I had to mute somebody. I'm recording, and we had a whole bunch of noise. So, Brother Salam, you're still on with me. If you have something that you want to say or anything like that, just hit 1 on your phone, and I'll bring you in, okay? But for now, everybody's muted. So the topic of the show from this point on is about the surviving an economic downturn. And this is what I really wanted to get to, as I was mentioning with my talk with Brother Salam, intentional community, okay? When you realize that things have turned around, you know, when your source of income, your means of subsistence is cut off, what's your plan? How do you intend to make it? You know, what are you going to do to make sure that you still have everything you need and you can still, you know, cover the bases, go from point A to point B and keep it moving until you can put yourself in a much better position. And this is not hypothetical anymore. We're actually living this, okay? So we're going to have a word from our sponsor, and then when we come back from that, we're going to jump into this conversation, and hopefully the people who are, you know, chatting and making little comments online will actually call in and join the conversation. So right now I want to turn your attention to our sponsor. For those of you who didn't know, brothers and sisters in the Nation of Islam are now producing vital necessities that every one of us uses, every one of us consumes. Freedom Paper Company, a privately owned company, is producing bathroom tissue. It's the only manufacturer of bathroom tissue in America right now. In addition to bathroom tissue, they distribute loads of other products that we all use on the regular. Paper towels, trash bags, liquid soap, brooms, mops, everything that you can think of that deals along the lines of janitorial and sanitation. That's from residential on up to commercial. So if you know of charter schools, if you know of daycares, if you know of doctor's offices and medical facilities that use these items, anything dealing with janitorial and sanitation supply is what Freedom Paper Company can offer you. And their motto is freedom is what you deserve. And what they're known for is giving you quality products, giving you more quality products for less. So go to the website, visit www.freedompapercompany.com, and show your love, show your support. Unless we support the businesses that spring up from within our community, the strength and the legs and the power that's supposed to undergird our community won't be there, and our community won't be strong heading into the future. So show your support, freedompapercompany.com. All right. Now, let's get into the meat of this subject here. If you haven't seen it already, if you get the opportunity, you should look for the Final Call newspaper distributed by those wonderful young gentlemen in suits and bow ties all across America, the Fruit of Islam. On the cover of this particular issue, it speaks specifically about America's shutdown. Congressional crisis, gridlock, and division plagues the United States. Where is the country headed? Now, it may seem like that's just a news story. It may seem like, oh, that's just some people in Washington, the government, Congress, and President Obama, and blah, blah, blah. But there are millions of American businesses, services, and things that have ground to a halt and are being held hostage while this thing plays out, this scenario plays out. It's not the first time that the government has shut down, but this is the first time that many people who have come of age are experiencing this. Over the past couple of days, I've seen news stories and people sending out links and, you know, updates about how people all over the country, from the poorest of the poor to the wealthy, are faced with scenarios like going to the supermarket and realizing that their public assistance card that will enable them to buy food, where back in the day they had food stamps, now there's a card, like a debit card that people use, those just don't work. The system has been shut off, like the rest of the government. People who are in the military, people who are actually on the job now, they can't stop their job. They're wherever they are in the middle of a war, but guess what? They're not receiving paychecks now because that has been cut off. That's been shut down. The government has stopped. The processing, in many instances, child support payments, support and aid to schools, various things that we take for granted, like it's always going to be there, have been stopped, frozen. So there are people who have needs, bona fide needs, right now are cut off from those needs. So the question is, how do you survive an economic downturn? If your income, if your paycheck, whatever you do to make money every week or every 2 weeks, if that suddenly gets cut off tomorrow, Monday morning, when you wake up, you realize, oh, well, we can't do this now. You know, whatever I thought was going to come in is not going to be coming in much longer after today. What's your plan of action? What are you going to do? Okay? How long before you really start to feel the pinch? When does it come into your mind that, okay, a plan B has to come into effect? Because if I'm dependent on people who can flip a switch and cut me off, or if I'm dependent on people who can't get their act together, much less, you know, take care of me and what I need to keep rolling, then I definitely need to take some action to put myself in a better position, even if it's going to take a little bit of time, okay? There's actually two parts to this, okay? Everybody knows that, you know, when we have a emergency scenario and something is pressing right then and there, you got to go into scramble mode. You got to go into hustle mode. You got to do what you got to do, so that from today to tomorrow, and you know, for the next few days, you can have the things you need. You can get your important issues taken care of. And of course, there's going to have to be some scrambling. There's going to have to be some reorganization of your priorities. but you can't just live the rest of your life in that mode. So you got to plan for the here and now, but you also have to plan long range so that a year from now you're no longer in that vulnerable position, okay? A year from now, even after the government, you know, gets it back together, you know, let's say they decide on a budget and, you know, all of this stuff picks up right where it left off and, you know, things get cooking again. Next year, let's give ourselves 12 months. Should we really be in the same position next year, knowing that at any moment there's going to be budget talks that happen again from September into October, and if it doesn't occur, you know, the government is stalled again? If you know, you and I know that outside of us, outside of our community, the vital things that we need is no longer going to be brought to our community. Shouldn't we do some planning now so that we no longer need to wait on what we need to come from outside of our community? What happened about being self-sufficient? That's where community comes in. That's where real community comes in, and that's what real community is. It's self-sustaining, self-sufficient. You don't have to wait for somebody else to bring you or to do for you what you can do for yourself. And that is something that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam have been promoting in America for over 83 years now. Okay, so now the message and that the reality of that is becoming more and more prevalent in our lives. We're actually seeing it. There's some people who have never even lived through times that we're experiencing now. They say things go in cycles, but when is the last time you can remember actually hearing, oh, the government has shut down and it is now affecting millions of people across America? I can't remember actually hearing that. It may have happened before. It may have happened for a couple of days. I think I was listening to the news today, and they said that the last shutdown was for 5 days, and I think it was back in the 90s. Well, guess what? This is going on 2 weeks now, and it doesn't look like the end is in sight. As a matter of fact, there's supposed to be a big deadline date. Okay, you know how everybody's got that date when you get your cutoff notice, or you get the first notice that your bill is late or whatever it is. Some of y'all know about that more than others. But you get the notification that, hey, you know, here's the date. If you don't do this, you're going to get a late fee tacked on or something. It's going to happen. Well, America itself has a date like that coming up. I think it's October 17th. If America doesn't get this thing figured out, they're going to default on bills, on obligations to other nations. Okay, the U.S. national debt, I'm sure you've heard about that over the years. It keeps on rising and rising, and now it's over $16 trillion debt. That's money that America owes to other countries and other central banks around the world. Okay, but eventually there's a certain date where if you don't pay, that has a negative impact on America as an economically stable business partner. The ramifications of that are very broad. And if you haven't already seen or heard anything about this, do a little bit of research. Go to YouTube. I just found out about this from a class that I'm taking, but it's right up on YouTube. There's a video called The Money Masters. Actually, I saw that on public. I heard them talk about that on public radio. You know how on public radio when they're doing a fundraising drive, they give away a DVD or something like that. On WPFW, Pacifica Radio in Washington, D.C., they were giving away this DVD called The Money Masters. And it goes all into the whole banking system, the central banking system that exists all around the world. Okay, there's the Central Bank of England. There's here, there's the Federal Reserve Bank, and the central banks all over the world. The central banking system, what we know as the Federal Reserve, is actually set up to be a totally different and separate power structure, okay, controls the money that nations, countries are actually subservient to, okay? There's a famous quote, a famous saying by Amschel Rothschild, I think that's his name. He said, I don't care who makes the laws in the country, just let me be in control of the money. That shows you who has the power. And now, even in America, the Federal Reserve Bank, totally separate, and there is no government institution that has power over the Federal Reserve. So the people who control our money supply, totally independent. And over history, over time, what they have done is grow economies and collapse economies. Grow economies and collapse economies. You can go all the way back to the American Revolution in America. And every time that there was an economic uptrend or an economic downturn, it's because central bankers and people who controlled the economic system for that country decided to make a move and decided to pull strings or tighten screws or loosen screws. So that is something to be very, very aware of. That's something more of us need to learn about and know about, because that gets right to the heart of what I'm talking about tonight. That gets right to the heart of how do we prepare ourselves, how do we make it through and sustain ourselves through an economic downturn. Now, chances are that in the near future, or, you know, over the course of the next 5, 10, 15 years, over the course of the next couple of years, the economy is not going to do that much better, okay? Things aren't going to get all great and gravy, and house, the cost of housing and the cost to purchase a house isn't going to come down so low that you can automatically qualify for a loan and the ability to get a loan. Chances are it's probably not going to get any easier than it is now. It's just not going in that direction. You know, economies move in trends, and currently the trend is not upward. Currently the trend and all indicators of the trend is going down. So what are we going to do? I ask the question, and some people say, well, I'm going to be all right. I got mine. Well, what does that mean for the people who are around you? When you're planning, are you planning to be able to take care of the other people who may be in need, the other people who don't have theirs and who aren't all right? Does your plan actually include knowing who you can turn to if you happen to not be as all right as you think you are? Maybe you think that because you got a little bit of, you know, stuff stashed in your mattress, that's going to be good enough. Or maybe you have a, you know, a bag of beans and a bag of rice and a couple gallons of water, you know, in your closet. But what happens if this goes on for a long time and that's not enough? What happens then? That's where the need for community comes in, okay? So let me refer you to another documentary that's right there on YouTube. I was just hip to this tonight. It's called The Power of Community. This is not a new thing that I'm talking about. Actually, exactly what I'm talking about took place in, of all places, Cuba. In the early 90s, shortly after the fall of the Soviet Union, the major trade partner with Cuba collapsed, disappeared. And overnight, the resources in Cuba dried up. Cuba's not an oil-producing nation, but Cuba used to buy oil from Russia, from the Soviet Union. Well, now that relationship didn't exist anymore. So things in Cuba ground to a halt. And if you know anything about how society, Western society, is run now, what's called the first world, you know, we have third world countries and then you have first world countries. I really don't know what a second world country is, but the leaders of the first world, everything runs off of oil. Everything is petroleum-based society. So that means the school buses didn't work, machines didn't work, producing electricity didn't work. Cuba didn't have any of that. And the economy, I think they said the economy slid down and actually dropped or plummeted by 80%. We can't even wrap our brains around, many of us can't even wrap our brains around what would happen in America if the economy slid by 80%. We can't even think about that now. So we're facing something that we can't even imagine the magnitude of. So believe me when I say it would be better to just plan in the right direction than wait until something smacks us in the face and we get hit by something we didn't prepare for. How did Cuba, how did these people make it? What did they do to get themselves through this economic downturn? That's an important question to ask because in many instances, it's the same as has been done all throughout history, all over the world, okay? And thankfully, the foresight of Minister Farrakhan in telling us that land is the basis of independence and now is the time where we are supposed to be going deuce our own by acquiring land so that we can start producing our own, okay? Now is the time for us collectively, the community of black people in America, need to come together for the purpose of purchasing land so that we can begin producing our own needs. Everything that you need, everything that is of vital importance comes from the land. The food that you eat, the clothes that you wear, the animals that graze on the grass that grows from the land, if you wear leather shoes, anything like that, if cotton grows, it's all coming from the earth. Or it's based out of the earth. The cows want to eat the grass that grow from the earth. So if you drink milk, if you eat cheese, if you use butter, if you're a meat eater, whatever, you got to have some land in order to qualify yourself for survival. So that is a critical aspect. What Cuba did when they realized that, oh, cities are falling apart and there's so many places where garbage is just being dumped and the wheels of society are grinding to a halt. One of the first things they did was clear away garbage, clear away land that wasn't being used and turned it into useful land. That means land where food can be grown. They said the average Cuban during that time, I think it was a 2 or 3 year stretch, the average Cuban during that time lost 20 pounds. It was like 20 pounds lighter. The country, the citizens of the country were like undernourished and, you know, they were weighing less because there was no food. The things that they imported in, they couldn't import in anymore. So think about that. When trucks can no longer deliver to the supermarket down the street, what are you going to do when you are hungry but you smell that your neighbor is cooking food? What are you going to do when nobody else around you has food and they can smell that you're cooking food? What are you going to do? The time is not – don't think about, hey, I'm going to defend myself and it's me against them. That's the wrong way to approach it. Everybody goes down like that. You get outnumbered by people who don't have. So the thing to do now is to start to think about community. How can we collectively pull together? That's supposed to be an African principle, right? Harambe, we all pull together. You know, that's as a matter of fact, the Kwanzaa principles, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics. It's all talking about us coming together, getting together, taking care of one another's needs. That's what an intentional community is. We should be appalled at finding that there are brothers and sisters and men and women in our own community that don't have the basic needs, homeless, basic needs, child care, basic needs, people who don't have enough food to go through the whole family, basic needs. We got to start looking out for one another. We got to start taking care of one another. How would you make it? How would you get the things you need? How would you be able to do the things you do if you didn't have money? We are so dependent on money, on dollar bills, U.S. reserve notes now. Now, without that, we'd be totally lost. So now's the time to start thinking, well, what alternative can we use? Is there such thing as an alternative to U.S. dollars? Yes, there is. Can you imagine? Here's a couple of them. I want you to do some research, okay? You can't listen to No Romance Without Finance without getting some homework, okay? Some action items you have to do. Do some research. Find out where the idea of fiat money came from, okay? Many of us have heard over the years that the the problems in the U.S. economy came when President Nixon in 1971 or 72 took the United States off the gold and silver standard, okay? Many people were told that that's where the problem came in. That's when the downturn in the U.S. economy started to take place. And there are many people who now are hurling the cry out, well, we ought to put the dollar back on the gold standard. That's what the dollar has to be backed by something, so let's make sure that the dollar is backed by gold. And it turns out that's actually not the best thing to do. Here's an example from history, okay? During the Revolutionary War, okay, before the Revolutionary War started, before heavy taxation began in the 13 colonies, the colonists had to find a way that they were going to be, you know, self-sustaining, be self-sufficient, and be able to maintain and grow their own economy. Okay, they had to make sure that everybody was able to prosper here in these 13 colonies. So Ben Franklin and whoever the power structure along with him was developed and began to circulate what was called continental scripts. Okay, continental scripts. This is money that the government at that time printed and made. A lot of us think government prints money nowadays. The government does not print the money nowadays. The Federal Reserve prints the money nowadays. And there's no guideline or limit in terms of how much money can be printed. So every year when they have this budget talk, they keep raising the budget. The budget is always more than it was the previous year. Where does that extra money come from? They just print it. They just make it up. If the budget to run America is one point something, whatever, trillion dollars, every year, the last year, well, this year, they just make it 1.5 million, 1.6 trillion, I mean. You know, they just come up with an arbitrary amount and print that much more. Well, when you do that, it produces a situation called inflation, okay? You get more money supply in the hands of the general public. It devalues the money. Okay, so that's why when you got these other countries, I think it was Zaire in Africa, they were talking about how a loaf of bread cost a couple million dollars or something like that because of the money had no value. No value. It takes $1 million to buy a loaf of bread. That means that money is worthless. That paper bill, whatever it was they had, is worthless. So back to Ben Franklin and the Continental Scripts. They put out a finite amount, a limited amount, into circulation, and everybody used that for trade. Everybody knew that this is what you would use if you want to make sure that you can transact business and trade goods and services. This is a standard form of payment, legal tender. Okay? Well, the problem came in, since I was talking about the gold standard, why that would be a problem is he who holds the gold makes the rules, okay? When the Bank of England, which is who the 13 colonies were obligated to, when the Bank of England heard that, oh, this is what's going on and y'all are getting rich and doing okay and we're not really getting all that we could out of you, they put a stop to that real quick. They put heavy taxation on the people who were in the 13 colonies and said, you need to pay us in gold. So that means these people had to now go find gold. They had to pay whatever they had of real value and trade that for gold. If the government of England, if the Bank of England, pardon me, if the Bank of England didn't accept continental scripts, then they had to give up some other real property, something else of value. That's where all of the tea and the sale of goods and services that were produced in America, that's where the taxation on that came from. Everything was taxed. And afterwards, people started losing jobs. People started losing income. People couldn't afford food, clothing, shelter, anything like that. Okay? So for those who are saying nowadays that the thing to do is just tie the dollar to the gold standard, that would produce an immediate devaluation of the money. Not a very good idea. Not good at all. So if we put our dependence on an idea, on something that other people said is real value, that's setting ourselves up again for a fall. What needs to happen is we put ourselves, take ourselves out of position so that whatever changes the U.S. government or central banks or whatever these institutions and entities go through, we isolate ourselves and insulate ourselves from the harm and the fallout that's going to come from the ensuing downturn. That's just what happens. It automatically happens when the people who control the money supply make that kind of move. Okay? You need another example from history? Here it is. During the Civil War, the U.S. Civil War, Abraham Lincoln was faced with the country that was being torn apart. In order for him to finance the war, to fight, to keep the Union together, to keep the country together, he needed a loan. Yes, America takes out loans. America goes to central banks, okay, and asks for a certain amount of money so that it can do whatever it has to do, and that's where you get a U.S. national debt from. The U.S., United States of America, borrows money. The federal government borrows money. But at that time, the economy of America, the economy of the Union, when it was facing that split, that being torn apart, Lincoln couldn't get a loan from the people he went to. They knew he was about to go in through some instability. So their interest in making a loan to the U.S. government was going to be in jeopardy. You don't loan money to people who might not pay you back. They didn't know if Lincoln was going to win or not, so they didn't make the loan to him. So he came back to Washington, D.C., and realized that anything was going to be done, America, the government of America, needed to take control of its own money supply. So guess what? Lincoln commissioned the Treasury to start producing what's called greenbacks. You heard that term before, right? Greenbacks. That's where it came from. Lincoln started producing money that had a green coloring on the backside, greenback, and had a red seal on the front. If you ever find money like that nowadays, it's worth a lot. Keep it. Okay? But the greenbacks, he put 450 million of these greenbacks into circulation, and this was the prescribed medium of transacting business. Okay? So this is how the government of the United States financed itself through the war. After Lincoln did this, didn't have anything to do with slavery, okay? After he messed with the people who control the money supply for this nation, he was assassinated. That's how this game plays out, okay? So all of this to say that there's the only thing that isolates and insulates you from being dependent on a foreign entity and their money supply, whether it's the U.S. government, whether it's the central bank, whether it's the Federal Reserve, the only way to protect yourself from an economic downturn is to come together as a community where you are producing the needs of yourself and your community without having to go outside of your community for what you need. Try to find a way to operate your equipment, your machinery, whatever you have, without having to go out and buy oil. That's where alternative energy sources come from. Windmills, solar energy. Start looking into these things. Time banking. Can you imagine time banking? Imagine if you need to have a tree cut down in your backyard and all of the stuff hauled away and, you know, the yard needs to be cleaned up. All of that's going to take time. You can either pay somebody if you have money to pay somebody. You can pay somebody to do that for you. It's always an option to leave it undone, you know. That, you know, we don't really need the tree treatment here for a while. It's not bothering nobody. Let's not bother the tree. You cannot get it done at all. Or you can do what's called time banking. time banking is where instead of paper, dollar, or coins, or bills, or anything like that, your currency of exchange is time. If people come and they put in a certain amount of time with you on this particular task, then what you owe back in return is time. It's a fair and even exchange. If you need some work done and somebody comes and helps you out for an hour, then when they need work done, you owe them an hour. Go help them out, pay them that hour back. We get the job done, the wheels of the community keep turning, and we don't have to worry about whether a paycheck came in or whether the government is shut down or whether somebody else outside brought a resource into our community. If we're only working on producing and living off of what we produce ourselves, then we want to be as self-sufficient, somebody else or people outside of our community as we possibly can be. As long as you got to wait on the government to put money on a card so you can buy food for your family, you're in a very vulnerable position. As long as you have to hope that maybe you can find child care while you go out to earn a living, you're putting your children in jeopardy because, you know, maybe they're with somebody, maybe they're just with whoever you can find at the moment. You don't know if that's the safest option for your children. And unfortunately, some people make that choice. There was a news story about a sister who, I think she had to work two or three jobs, but she was homeless and she was living in a storage unit. Whoever it was found out about it. The authorities came. They got her children. They went into that storage unit. Her children were left there in the storage unit while she was out working her second job. You can't say that she's a bad mother, she's this, she's that. She's doing what she had to do. Why? Because she didn't have community. She didn't have anyone who was there who could help her take care of what she needed to take care of. That has to change. That's the part of the equation that we have to see, really understand, and then begin to do something about. Okay? So, as I draw to a close, this is the we're coming up on the end of the show. And the questions that I raised were, how long would it take before you really felt the pinch? You know, some people were saying, man, you know, I could probably make it to next payday, but if I didn't get my next paycheck, I'd be sunk. Some people said it wouldn't even take that long before they felt the pinch. If they missed a paycheck, the very next day, the bottom would fall out. It would take one day. Man, I can't go grocery shopping until I get paid next week. Well, if you don't get paid next week, guess what? No groceries. We got to plan something. We got to plan and do a little bit better than that. If you know what you're facing, if you know what's up ahead, then you have the obligation to do something about it. Do something to save yourself. Minister Farrakhan said, business is warfare. And in case you haven't noticed, we are at war. The economic survival of us as a people is at stake. So you really can't afford to not do something, not take that seriously. If you're in a schoolyard fight and you do nothing, guess what's going to happen to you? You're going to get your tail whooped. And that's the position that we, black people in America, and many Americans are in now. We may think that, oh, I'm not black, that doesn't apply to me, or, you know, what does that mean for Latinos? What does that mean for the Asian community? All of America is in that same boat. The only difference is some people realize it and some people are poised to weather the storm. Okay? We talk about downturns, upturns, trends. Storms have ups and downs just like that. Okay? Some people know what to do so that they can survive the downturn, which is eventually coming. Watching Scandal, watching Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football, you know, talking about the Real House Husbands of Hollywood, that's not going to cut it. We got to wake up and get busy, become producers, you know, learn an industry, learn something that's going to make you a valuable contributor to your community. Like Brother Salam, he intends to impact his community through art that has value. Might not have the same value as it would if the only thing that I really want is food. But guess what? As part of our community if what he's putting out there to entertain, if what he's putting out there to touch the hearts and the ears and the eyes of people in our community paints that picture of us being industrious and us being producers and productive, and guess what? He plays his part to shortcut any downturn that we may face in the future, because he's already put the vision out there for people to see that we need to do something about this problem that is going to be at our front door. That's a very valuable person. So when you add value to your community like that, your community will in turn take care of you. If you're the school teacher, if you're the one who takes care of child care and educating the youth, the next generation, so that 10, 15, 20 years from now, our community is in a better position, you're a valuable person. You're a very valuable person, okay? And you bringing that value to the table is how you can make sure that your community will take care of you. If you're the person who fixes the machines and fixes the cars that keeps everybody running, if you have that kind of specialized knowledge so that others can do what they have to do to earn for themselves and earn for the rest of the people in the community, you're valuable. You got your place in the community, your place in society. If you grow the food, learn about these things. Pick an area and learn about it. Technology, arts and culture, agriculture, health care, whatever it is. Pick an area that's valuable and that's vital, not so that you can get other people's money, but so that you have something to offer when people are in need, and then in turn, when people find that you're in need, others who have prepared themselves and educated themselves and gone into fields of specialized knowledge, when they see you're in need, they'll take care of your needs, and that's how we form a community. That's the basis of community, okay? Self-improvement, better yourself, acquire knowledge to benefit yourself and your kind, your people, and then in turn become a servant. Offer the benefit of what you learn to take care of those who are in need, and they'll do the exact same to you. Okay, you may have to, when you imagine times get hard, people are going to be losing houses, you know, unable to pay the rent, unable to pay the mortgage. What's going to happen when the family down the street gets evicted? Think about that. Are you going to let people that you know or people that you see, that you know, that you call friends or neighbors, are you going to let them just be homeless while you have a roof over your head? I hope that we have more heart and compassion than that. There may be a time when you have to open up your home and actually take another family in. There may be a time when just because you bought coats and sneakers and pants and whatnot for your children doesn't mean that your job is done. There may be a family down the street that doesn't have that. Mom may be the best cook in the town, but her children don't have food. Her children don't have the necessary clothes that they need to get through the winter. Take care of them. Be the one. Okay, promote that in your community. We got to take care of one another. If you know that there's sisters in your community, in your nation, that are homeless, that are out on the street with nowhere to go, and you call yourself a brother, you call yourself a sister, something's not adding up there. Do something about that. Make a difference. Be compassionate. Serve other people's needs in the way that they need it the most, because at a certain point in time, we are all going to need one another. And if we're not in the habit of practicing what we need to do now, it's going to be very, very difficult and uncomfortable to do what we need to do then. So why don't we put ourselves in the habit, practice discipline, the kind of discipline that saves lives and wins battles. Take this economic downturn talk seriously and prepare yourself, prepare ourselves, so that regardless to whether the government shuts down, regardless to who cuts off assistance, regardless to what's going on outside of our community, we can be self-sufficient, self-sustaining, and independent of needs of anyone and anything else. All right? So that's the end. That's all that I had to share for this show. There are people who did call in, but I saw that some of them left out. You know, people came and went. There were also people who who came into the chat room. And I appreciate everybody who came in, but I was flowing. I was trying to, make it known that get on with it. In the future, I will make sure that this is rebroadcast. I'll make sure that the link goes out. Please share this link with other people. This is too important for us to. This is too important a subject for us to ignore. Okay, so again, go back, go to YouTube, look up documentary The Money Masters, and part two to that is called The Secret of Oz. Look up both of those; they're very long, but they're very informative. And then look up the documentary on The Power of Community, which is the story of Cuba and how Cuba survived the peak oil crisis. Okay? Look that up. It's a great documentary. That one's less than an hour, so you can get a lot from that, and it won't be too overwhelming. But it's definitely worth the time, worth the while, and this is the subject that we are going to have to revisit over and over and over again until we get it right. So I want to thank you all for joining me on the No Romance Without Finance show. We're at the end of our time. I knew that time would go quick, but I definitely didn't want to let this week go past without us talking about this topic. So until next week, we're going to have another great show. We're going to have some more good stuff planned. There's No Romance Without Finance. We may want to get to a bunch of other topics, but until we get the first priorities in place, we can't move forward. So let's start acting and treating one another like we really are a community. We need one another, and we don't have time to sit around and wait for somebody to do for us what we can and should do for ourselves. Peace and blessings, y'all.